Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So it's a spooky time. It's the dark of the moon when people gather to determine the course of culture, toss everything into the pre-eclipse equinox cauldron, and ladle out a cultural miracle. I love that in Arabic fairy tales, the opening is, it was and it was not. So we're here to animating a culture of liberating equality and requires us to navigate this highly fluctuating field of ravenous, cruel creepitude. We soon, at the perfect time, will be welcoming actor, comedian, author, political, spiritual wit, agent of liberating Christianity, John Fugelsang. At the perfect time, he's busy pitching his fantastic book, honoring his fantabulous book, which will be next week's pledge incentive, A Liberating Voice, to support Pacifica KPFA's Liberating Voice. The book is Separation of Church and Hate, A Sane Person's Guide to Taking Back the Bible from Fundamentalists, Fascists, and Flock-Fleecing Frauds. It's so deft for now. The reason I heard John Fugelsang on an interview with Andy Borowitz, and I was like, oh, now this is it. This is what we need now, rummaging through, you know, all the Charlie Kirk and the, you know, the Groypers and that. And it's like, no, this is it. A guide for all to be agents of informed, sane reverence to assume cultural narrative lead. Here, while we're awaiting the lad himself, let's play a very short clip of John Fugelsang. Here we go.
Jesus is very specific about how we're supposed to treat all people. You're supposed to treat gay people the same way you treat him. But they don't like Jesus, too woke, so they go to Leviticus. The same people who deny his Judaism fall back on Hebrew scriptures. But Leviticus 20:10 commands us to stone adulterers to death. So if you're going to use Leviticus against the gays, you better start collecting some rocks for Donald Trump, and I'll let the Secret Service know you're coming. They don't follow Andy. They don't believe this book. They don't believe the passages they weaponize to hurt people.
Yes. Well, that's a little taste of this book and our author who will be joining us at the perfect time. But we're flexible. We're flexible. So here we are. The Sunday is the eclipse, and it is Bill McKibben calls for it being Sunday. He's busy giving a talk right this second in Los Angeles. He is an embodiment of Wendell Berry saying, be jaunty, even though fully informed. He's super fully informed. But so Sunday, which is Sunday, S-U-N, to reboot the world and geopolitics. And he goes into, you know, China, the first electrostate, and Pakistan doing pretty good on solar, and Texas putting up clean energy faster than California, and big oil doesn't like that. But change policy in states for solar panels. So there's all of that, which is perfect. And an eclipse and equinox coming so close together remind us that the experiment on this planet, the evolutionary experiment, is of equality, egalitarian equality. We're the only planet we know of that can have eclipses because the sun and the moon are equal-sized visually in the sky. We won't always, right, because the moon is slowly moving away. So in a million years, we won't have eclipses. But for now, it's a reminder. So this eclipse at the very last degree of Virgo, whose image is an emergency, one's attention goes to matters at hand. And we go, yeah, that would be true. The other image for it is a woman calmly cleaning the house in the midst of an earthquake. And we go, yes, that also is true. And then the equinox, equal night and day, equal Mars and Venus, equal humans and the rest of our kin, equal at this time. So it is this, you know, extraordinary realm of super cruelty that we see everywhere, you know, just everywhere, right? the insanity and the suppression of voices, right? Jimmy Kimmel, right? Just a small but large incident. We honor that. We know that, you know, Kilmar Abrego Garcia still detained, you know, oh God, Mahmoud Khalil, Palestinian sane reverent voice for Palestine and equality at Columbia, you know, with a legal permanent residency, may be deported to Syria or Albania. No, not Albania, somewhere else, but like that. Anyway, so yeah, there's a lot to toss into the cauldron, and we are given mythologically the cauldron. So here we are, this fluctuating field, right? It was and it was not tippy. We love Terry Pratchett saying, magic is easy, just find the fulcrum and push or blow. So we're at one of those points where everything that everyone does matters enormously. So I always love to reference William Kittredge's marvelous poem about the raven rattle from the Tsimshian Indians, in which we see a person lying back, in sexual openness, and a frog mounting them, and their tongue between them all. And what Kittredge ends with saying, here we are, inextricably one with everything, however tricked, riding, in fact, on the back of trickiness itself. And we go, yeah. So let us be mutual aid accomplices, no matter what, at this crucial time, to ladle out of the cauldron of cruelty, symbiotic mutualism. Ah, and our guest is available. How wonderful. Welcome, John Fugelsang.
What a great pleasure. You had me with being mounted by a frog. Thank you.
Yes, no, it's a great thing. Again, here we are with everything, with one tongue shared between everything. So that's great. Anyway, so thank you so much for our tag and for your being such a good sport, because it was after I heard your interview with Andy Borowitz, I'm like, this is it for now, because I was rummaging through all of the, as I said, all the, Charlie Kirk and the Groper things, and it's like, no. This is it. Your fabulous book, the title, your capacity to express complex things in vernacular accessibility. So yeah. So wherever it's a democratic show. You can go wherever you want at any time, of course.
Right on.
And I've been listening. The actual book arrived just now, and I go, oh, it's so good. Every chapter is an outline and a strategy. And listening, also, I want to give a pitch to the Audible, which is your voice, and it's riveting. It's riveting. So I it's
Thank
been a
you.
companion, and we are
I'm
offering the
honored.
book
Thank
next
you.
week as our pledge drive. But anyway, so that's
Oh, thank you so
fabulous.
much. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm wildly enthused. Absolutely. So, yeah, because we do have the metaphor of the eclipse and the cauldron. And what do we want to toss into the cauldron? And how about addiction to having an enemy? Should we throw that into the cauldron?
Addiction to what?
To having an enemy.
Oh yeah. I mean, as I say in the book early on, if your church is not telling you to love your enemies, but your church is telling you who your enemies are, you're not really in a church. And that's the whole basis of it. I think the whole history of Christianity has been, Christians versus the people who actually follow Christ. More and more, as I performed and broadcast around the country, I always hear how the top religion, the most fastest growing religion in our country, is Mormonism, or some say Islam, some say none of the above. But over the years, I've come to really believe the largest growing spiritual demographic in our country are people who were raised religious, but now consider themselves spiritual because they're turned off to all the cruelties and hypocrisies that we've witnessed from the fundamentalist and Christian nationalism in organized religion. And I wrote this book because I grew up believing Christianity was about love and service and putting others before yourself and helping the least of these, all the things Christ talked about, welcoming the stranger. Individuals and nations should care for the poor, care for the sick. And millions of us grew up in the 80s and 90s to find that that religion of love and peace was seemingly hijacked by this right-wing, white supremacist, tax-free, mean little clique run by these ex-segregationists and televangelists. And they wound up settling 5 years after Roe v. Wade, which wasn't controversial. It took 5 years before Falwell ever mentioned abortion in a sermon. But once they realized that Roe v. Wade would be their magic ticket to unite the right wing that was sort of lost at sea after they lost on civil rights and voting rights and Nixon, we've seen what's happened. I mean, for the last 45 years, criminalizing abortion and being mean to gay people have become synonymous with Christianity. if you tell people you're Christian, 9 times out of 10, they'll believe you despise gay people and think that the government should force citizens to be pregnant against their will. The problem is that Jesus never comes out against gay, against abortion, never comes out against gay people. In fact, Jesus commands us to treat gay people and women who've had abortions exactly the way we treat him. So my mom was a nun for 16 years. My father was a Franciscan brother. I had a weird, abnormally Catholic childhood. And I wrote this book for any believer and any atheist who's going to have to deal with a Christian nationalist in their family or their workplace or their government.
Yeah, no, I love that you dedicate the book to your mother, father, known as Peggy and Jack, also known as Sister Damien and Brother Boniface. That's thank you. So you really had an assignment.
Oh yes, very much. I worked on this book for a long time, and my first draft of it, the first pitch I ever sent in as a book proposal was 15 years ago when my father was in hospice, and my father actually hit send on the email for the first ever submission of a book proposal for this idea. That was 15 years ago this summer, and yesterday the book in its first week of release made the New York Times bestseller list. So, it was very, very bittersweet for my parents. But yeah, I wrote this because I believe in the Christianity they raised me in—one of love and forgiveness and service to others.
Well, I actually had a moment. It's pretty early on because I'm playing with dolls in my dollhouse, and I'm going over the Nicene Creed. The one God, the only God, the only church. And I'm going, no.
Well, one creed to rule them all, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going, absolutely not. I did hang in to get confirmed, and I just picked the martyr who won. I figured it was a kind of kinky, erotic, sadomasochistic cult, and so I picked, Agatha, right, Agatha. Anyway, so, yes, and then I have a wonderful colleague I collaborate with often, Patricia Ewing, who's a political activist and strategist, but also loves Christianity, and she's called it liberating Christianity, meaning finding that which is liberating in it and setting it free, which is what you're doing, right?
Exactly.
You're tracking it back.
I'm not a theologian or clergy. I mean, you're talking about really, truly good people who walk the walk. I am just a vulgar comedian who has learned the joys of mocking hypocrites because Jesus showed me the way. And you'll be surprised at how good it feels. And I also find that when you're dealing with these people, if there are loved ones, then, hate doesn't work. And calling them superstitious bigots doesn't work. But I find that sometimes, whether you're a believer or an atheist, if these people are in your family, we got to live with them. And I find sometimes if you engage them on what the Bible actually says, it can be pretty funny. They won't agree with you, but they might take the time. They might appreciate you took the time to actually engage them on what the scripture says. If you just know a few things about a few different issues and what Jesus says, you could really have these conversations without hate. And I've come to find that you'll get a lot farther showing your racist uncle that Jesus was not an immigrant-hating homophobe than if you just dismiss your uncle and call him an immigrant-hating homophobe. He'll just assume you're on the side of Satan then. We got to be the good guys. And the good news is, if you're debating a right-wing Christian on any of the subjects that divide us, chances are, even if you're an atheist, Jesus is on your side.
Yeah, no, we want to bring in all that's been excluded and all that, some of us might have known, but you lay it out so clearly. And again, with such a deft, jaunty tone, really, really great. Because St. Bridget was also renowned for performing the miracle of abortion on one of the nuns.
Right.
The whole abortion thing. I forgot which, you will know, which council, the council decided that, abortion is okay until quickening, which is when you
That's
can
right.
feel the child kick. And what council was that where they determined that?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up in my book or in
right. Okay. Yeah, that's right. No, your book.
But that's the point. Back when Roe was decided, the Southern Baptist Convention voted to affirm abortion rights the year before Roe v. Wade and the year after Roe v. Wade. Jerry Falwell never mentioned abortion in any sermon until 5 years later. In the 1970s, the right-wing Christians were segregationists. Jerry Falwell opened whites-only schools and defended apartheid. And their big issue in the 70s was that Jimmy Carter was threatening the tax-exempt status of colleges and universities that still practiced racial segregation. Ronald Reagan talked about Jimmy Carter's meddling IRS more in the 1980 campaign than he talked about abortion. Their whole thing was that, you know, Jimmy Carter threatened to take tax-exempt status away from the Mormons if they wouldn't let black men hold the priesthood, and he was going after the universities because that's what a Christian would do. Say you don't get to call yourself Christian and practice racial discrimination and expect to get special treatment from a society based on secular values and equality. They ran defending racism, and it wasn't selling too well. It didn't help them too much. So by the early 80s, they recognized abortion was going to be their golden ticket. And as a consequence, we've had two generations of Christians in this country who've been raised to vote against everything Jesus ever talked about by talking about abortion, which Jesus never talked about.
No, it's so that's so crucial because your book is a handbook for one of the things that's distilled and that you say with everywhere in the book and also with Andy Borowitz is don't argue, make others argue with Jesus. And it's like
that's the way to do
genius,
it.
Deft spiral out of the polarity, and nobody really minds being asked, did you know? Unless we ask it in a snarky way, did you know? No, I didn't know that. Or that's interesting. So let's go over.
When they're trying to call the Christian refugees at our border illegals, I just say God commands the Hebrews in the Old Testament to welcome the stranger, treat the alien as one of your own. Jesus goes a step further and says individuals and nations will be judged by how they welcome the stranger in Matthew 25. So please tell me, whoever you're arguing with, why should I listen to you and Donald Trump and reject God and Jesus? Ask them. You don't have to fight them. Make them argue with God. Make them argue with Jesus. Make them argue with this book they wave around so bombastically.
Right. And then we cross borders to pick up everything useful. I was lucky enough some years back to spend time with Bedouins in Syria, and the Bedouin response, we knocked on a stranger's door. And my friend Deborah, who lives there, said, no, we can do that. And I was like, really? No other Westerners, no cars around. And the woman opens it and goes, oh, strangers, how wonderful. Right. Their approach is, you must have traveled so far. You must have so many stories. They must be the stories we need. Please come in. And it's like, yes, more like that. That's really good.
Every Christian has a choice on how we're going to be. Are you going to be a no room at the inn, or are you going to be a welcome the stranger Christian?
Yes. And then take us to Paul and how Paul kidnapped Christianity, and so many people who reference Christianity are really referencing Paul. This is really important for everyone.
Well, your listeners know this much better than most people and better than me. When I set out to write this book, I never planned on writing a whole chapter about Paul. I never thought I'd have to do that. But I realized if I'm going to talk about what Christianity started out as and what it turned into, you have to mention Paul. Because he, for everything, better or worse, he's responsible for what Christianity is now. There was only about 20 people preaching Jesus' message after he died, right? And the apostles were all getting murdered by guys like Paul. When he was still Saul of Tarsus, he was present at the martyring of St. Stephen. He was all down for murdering the apostles, and he liked to hunt Christians down. He was like a bounty hunter who would have done the work for free. And he was so good at it, they sent him out to other cities because Paul, still Saul, was both a Pharisee and a Roman citizen, which means he could travel around the Roman Empire much more freely, say, than a lot of Jesus's apostles. So when Paul had his conversion moment and became Paul, he was able to preach to the Gentiles and bring Jesus's message all around the empire. And he was able to do it and have his version stick because his old buddies were still killing all of Jesus's old pals back home. So Paul's version lasted. Paul's version is what the Roman Empire took and ran with. And Paul poured all of his hang-ups into the work, his hang-ups about women. Jesus was an incredible feminist. Paul was not. Jesus was not a homophobe at all. Paul kind of was. Paul got grossed out by guys hooking up with guys in Roman pagan temple rituals. So Paul pours all that into the work. And Paul probably had no idea that one day his letters would be used by homophobes and bigots who wanted to pretend that Jesus agreed with their homophobia. 300 years after he's dead, you know, I mean, Paul wrote to Timothy, and he said, all scripture is God-breathed. He's talking about the Hebrew scriptures, and he's saying it, all the prophets, it all comes from God. All scripture is God-breathed. When he wrote that to Timothy, he wasn't referring to his letter to Timothy. He was talking about the Hebrew scriptures, not what I'm writing here, but he was writing letters about how the scripture is God-breathed. 300 years after he's dead, the Roman Empire takes over. They decide in the Council of Nicaea that Paul's letters are Holy Scripture. They're going to be in the New Testament. This is when they created the canon. So suddenly, Paul's letters about Holy Scripture are considered Holy Scripture. Suddenly, Paul's writings about God are now quoted by guys who assume that Paul gets to speak for God. Suddenly, the homophobes who have to go to the Old Testament because Jesus won't satisfy their prejudice, well, they have somewhere else in the New Testament they can go as well. And to this day, when you ask a right-winger to say, where does Jesus back up your homophobia, they'll quote Leviticus, maybe Deuteronomy, they'll quote a lot of Paul, but they'll never quote Jesus. And Paul's choices led directly to everything good about Christianity, and they led to the Crusades, they led to the Spanish Inquisition, they led to the Holocaust, and they led to the Donald Trump Bible. Everything good and bad came from Paul, all about the hierarchy, not so much the homeless Jewish carpenter.
Yeah, I love, I still have affection for Reverend Ike, the prosperity minister, popular in the 80s. You know? But, yeah. But he said, Brother Paul, some woman must have done him a deal because he was way out of line with women, right? Women should not be speaking, they should not.
He's so out of line with women. So sexist. Jesus is a huge feminist. Paul is not. But then in other parts, you know, Paul talks about like Phoebe, who's a deacon in the church. So in one letter, he's saying that women can't speak in a church and must always be subservient to men. In another letter, he's talking about how Phoebe's a deacon and how this other woman saved his life and this other woman's financing his ministry. So what gives? Was Paul like writing different things to different audiences, or more likely, have these letters been rewritten so many times over the years, we're not really sure what was meant in the first place? Either way, it doesn't matter because Paul's not Jesus. And if someone's quoting Jesus, if someone's quoting Paul to get around Jesus, then they're a Paulist. They're not a Christian.
Right. Right. And it's also a smidge like almost Pope Valentinius that my friend Pat taught me about too, which was he was almost Pope. And almost Pope Valentinius was like equal men and women, equal you're a layperson, then you're clergy next week, then you rotate around. And this idea of original sin, what a silly idea. And he's almost Pope, right? But the fathers get together and they're so insane that they spend the next two centuries refuting Valentinius, after whom we name Valentine's Day. So Valentine's Day is meant to be about equal. So yeah, the women and equality and Paul as a pro-empire guy. But again, complex, as you say. And so so there's Paul, well,
and
there's Leviticus.
The so complex that Paul was ultimately killed by the Roman Empire. Eventually his luck ran out, and being a Roman citizen was not enough to save him.
Yes. Right. So there's it's kind of like a Carl Hiaasen novel where people meet their fate in some horrible but weirdly satisfying way. It's sort of like, you know, boomerang. May anything go back to its source with a pie in the face. So, Paul. Well, we're sorry. We celebrate no death. We celebrate no death now or ever of any kind. Everything a unique experiment. And I guess Paul shows that you can change, sort of, you know, I mean, from being an ICE agent, exactly. You know, or what, you know, into a leader, and then, you know, no women, but yes, women. So it's kind of part of our strategy to aspire to leave room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways, not counting on it.
Look at how many people have talked their parents and grandparents out of so much un-Jesus-like homophobia in the last 30 years. We've seen it. We've witnessed us getting more decent as a culture.
Yes. It's interesting. I have so many friends born in the 90s, the mid 90s. Again, practical, idealistic people with high levels of tolerance. These people that I grew up watching the whole time from zero to here. And yet the Charlie Kirks and the Fuentes, they're born then too. So they also, I mean, because what my wonderful ally says is, all of her friends are, highly tolerant and all of that quality of that generation, except for, the yearning to be part of a community in which the cult is the toxic mimic of the thing. So it's quirky there. But the real invitation, which your book is kind of like a humming and accessible and very witty, and it's true. I can't wait to get back to the Audible, and now I have the book, and I'm going to spend all
Oh,
next
you're
week
so
touting
kind.
it, even without you. Yeah, because no,
Well,
I
I'm
think
honored.
it's
Thank you.
well, I think it really is essential. As I kept saying, no, do come here, because it's so now. Well, it's on the New York Times bestseller list, which is a very positive augury, right? I mean, it's sort of like
I think
Josh
so, and
Johnson
considering that
being.
we had no major media appearances, no TV appearances the week of the release. So for me, the fact that we were able to get New York Times bestseller list just on the virtue of independent and progressive media, it tells me that there is a massive audience of people who were raised Christian and are really alienated from this meanness that passes for Christianity today.
No, I view it as a good augury, and also a good augury. I don't know if you know the comedian Josh Johnson. Yes, probably you do.
Yes.
Right. But he's wildly popular, and he's very relaxed and tolerant, and a long, relaxed storytelling, and people love it. And he takes the personal thing, and then halfway through, he ties it to a big collective thing. It's like that's a good augury too, that somebody like this gentle. Again, what you're saying about the teachings of Jesus, and Josh Johnson and yourself, strong enough to be gentle. Strong enough to be
Oh, well,
gentle is really,
well, he's stronger than me because I'm gentle in the book. I'm not as gentle as I'd like to be on stage. But Josh
Oh,
certainly
really?
does have a really. Oh, I'm much more George Carlin than Bodhisattva. Yes,
Oh, that's
on
no,
stage, I'm much
Bodhisattva
more rip their
Coyote.
heads off.
That's great. Now, Bodhisattva Coyote, we want a little spice, because we don't want to be nice, or because nice comes from nescient, which means ignorant, but we do want to be kind-hearted, right? I mean,
Yeah.
are you kind-hearted in your spicy, sharp-tongued self on stage?
I do hope to be, and I try to only direct the only targets I ever take on are people in power and mean people. I don't
That's important.
ever go after people who are suckers or who have been led astray, unless they're mean. That's it. People in power, I'm not into punching down. Jesus's whole ministry was about taking the people at the lowest parts of the totem pole and raising them up, the lepers, the prostitutes, the despised foreign minority like the Samaritans. This administration's whole gig is beating up on the marginalized, the immigrants, the refugee, the transgender kid, the trans soldier who wants to serve the country. It's all punching down. And punching down does not work in comedy or Christianity.
No, it's an abdication of the role of the sacred trickster fool, which I mean, and you do identify, presumably, right, with the liberating trickster, spicy satirist who takes on tyranny. That's part of that's your team, right?
I aspire to be, but they're much more dignified and good people than me.
No. We would no. We need everybody. We need everybody. We want your because you can even if in your spicy George Carlin like thing and may he be praised, although a little mean. But the word charisma comes from charis, from which we get charitable and Eucharist and Cordelia and
Yes.
dedicated heart in
And
Shakespeare.
I'm so sorry that I have to run, but if it's ever possible to come
Well,
back, I'd love to join you again.
okay, that's adorable. All right, we're grateful for whatever you got. Okay, thank you. More soon,
Thank you so
later.
much.
Thank you for your work. God bless you. I'll carry on somehow. Okay, that's great. All right, and off he goes. He comes and he goes. So team, so here we are, and it's fortunately time for almost for our break music. But yeah, I can just go through a lot in the book, and we didn't even get to Bathsheba and things. Well, he's on a roll. He is. And now we can secretly talk astrology without frightening any grown-ups in the neighborhood. You know, John Fugelson is a sun in Virgo, language crafting, exactly square his moon in Gemini, the other Mercury realm, which is why I said, without referencing astrology in case it might frighten somebody, you know, he's got the deep, complex, hermetic language craft of Virgo and the conversational, accessible vernacular of Gemini, and he's doing it. He's doing his weird, and it is such a grand book, and I'm glad that I get to play with it next week as one of our pledge incentives, because I can't think of anything more useful to our team. There are many things that are useful, but this is among them, too. So we have our break music lined up. And so we will play a pertinent thing, Monrovia, Heavy Foot, and we'll be right back on the other side of this music. Here we go.
Do you hear the sound of a bell? Did you wish your family well? Times ain't the same in the neighborhood. Got the parents all going through hell. Cause the guns keep flying off the shelf. Do you see the man on the street just fighting for a meal or tea? You can write him off as a lunatic, but it could have been you or me if we didn't ever find our feet. Love me now. Gaslight, ain't it funny how far we came for them to go and change the name? Do you see the man on the screen? Just a puppet, but you never see the strings. Calling it a war, not a genocide. Telling us it isn't what it seems. Man, that's a different kind of greed.
Yay. Here we are, team. This is the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. And we just had a taste in the first half of John Fugelsang, whose fabulous book we are honoring and touting and everything about it. It's really great, and we'll be offering it next week as a pledge incentive. It's perfect to pledge to KPFA and Pacifica to keep it's a liberating voice, to keep liberating voices on the air, and it's so skillful. So yeah, just the pitch for it. The book is Separation of Church and Hate. Brilliant. A Sane Person's Guide to Taking Back the Bible from Fundamentalist Fascists and Flock-Fleeging Frauds. There we go. So yeah, the blurbs are good too. John Fugelsang just dragged fake Christians harder than a Real Housewives reunion. This book is like Sunday school if your teacher had a mic, a spine, and zero tolerance for BS. It's smart, it's savage, and somehow still full of heart. Yeah, it's got lots of praise. Willie Nelson, bless his heart. Willie Nelson is going to the Midwest to do, again, fundraisers for farmers who are going under due to tariffs, right? Many good people. We are here to take the cult out of culture, yeah, everything into the cauldron, this vituperative vitriol, polarity, cruelty, you know, the ashes, and ladle out a culture of, you know, reciprocal, mutual, symbiotic, we'll throw all those words together, you know, mutual aid, right? So Willie Nelson says John Fugelsang nails this in his book, Separation of Church and Hate. The Bible says in John 4:8 that God is love, period, end of story. Brad Meltzer says John Fugelsang is tired of religion being used as a cover for meanness. Yeah, no, it's time to take it back. And John is ardent through the thing, going, you don't have to believe in anything. You can be an atheist, you can be a whatever, you can be it's just to be able to have these useful, original, liberating teachings of Jesus that are nothing like how they've been repurposed to serve intolerance and tyranny. And it's so useful. We'll go through some of it. And it says, Fugelsang has discovered the kryptonite to use against Christian fundamentalists, a deep, intelligent knowledge of the Bible. It's true. America's soul needs scrubbing, and here's a brush. Is this book The Truth and the Light? Can't say, but it's certainly the hypocritical modern Christian's worst nightmare. Well, yeah, kind of. Although it's very... You know, he might be feisty on stage, as he says, like more like George Carlin. Yeah, but we like that, you know, because part of, you know, the sacrament that we're aspiring to and is to be fully informed of the sketchiness, you know, in the teaching of Jesus, be fully informed of just how sketchy and horrific people, things are, and to love them anyway. It's like with all of the banter about, you know, Charlie Kirk out there, you know, and people going, you know, polarity going, you know, oh, he was, a number of people I know, some are relatives, go, I didn't know anything about Charlie Kirk, but now I realize he's like Jesus. I'm like, oh, God, no. You know, and some astrologers, alleged astrologers going, I didn't know anything about him, but I realize he's a godly man. And it's like, no, to really love someone and to celebrate no death is I think only possible when fully informed, going the cruelty, and then other things, you know, the people sent little clips of like a moment of Charlie Kirk being having a civil conversation with a young woman again transitioning, but it was a respectful conversation, and we go, there are those things, and let's keep in mind that, again, nuance and complexity, you know, that Charlie Kirk in the weeks leading up to his death was going disobediently off script. One, he was saying, release the Epstein files, all of them, every client, everything, all of it. And it's like, oh, people didn't like that. Some people, the overlords, didn't like that. And he was also going off script on Israel. He's like, of course I support Israel my whole life. However, Netanyahu is a conniving cult leader crook who probably knew about October 7th and let it happen, you know, and we should really, and then he said, you know, he was worried that Israel was going to kill him. Not that there's anything simple here. I think part of our assignment is, you know, no certain story. It's all part of the mythic news to go, Remember the eclipse point, you know, on Saturday, partial eclipse, but still, you know, 29 degrees Virgo, which is a woman calmly cleaning the house in the midst of an earthquake, right? Calm, awareness of danger with a calm and cultivating true charisma, which is a charitable heart. There we go. And so here's Stevie Van Zandt says, Separation of Church and Hate is not just an extraordinary, enjoyable read. It's historically important. It is. I do want to commend, again, John Fugelsang for the deftness of tone. He writes like he speaks, because I'm both reading and listening to the audible, which is great. And it's irresistibly eloquent. Well, in fact, he has quintiles, I can say that. Mercury and Mars, his Mercury quintiles Mars, irresistible eloquence. His Mars is at 19 Sagittarius, which is, some astrologers say, is the resolving climate crisis degree, because its image is long-term vision. His Uranus genius trickster, south is to Libra. That's where Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have their Mercury. The image for that is dawn of a new day reveals everything changed. Again, jaunty, though fully informed. It's like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, John Fugelsang, you know, and all who resonate. And it's right next to his Mercury, his mind, and Jupiter in Libra, which is, there's nothing simple. Right. Charlie Kirk and I share a birthday, I discovered, going, and George Floyd. George Floyd, Charlie Kirk, and me are all born October 14th. And so is Hannah Arendt and many other people, too. And it's like, there, that proves astrology. No, it's just like, huh. Which is why I was like, well, let me give this George Floyd, I've always felt kinned with, October 14th ally, was a particular object of scorn and derision by Charlie Kirk. They shared a birthday in the mythic news. But John Fugelsang has his Mercury and Jupiter storytelling the same degree at a highly cultivated, charming. Yeah, he might be like George Carlin. We like that too. That we like the spiciness. But they quintile, and it's in Libra. I love Matthew Arnold saying to be cultured is to be acquainted with the highest possibilities of the human spirit throughout time. It's like, that's a good start. I never like limiting anything to just humans. Highest possibility of wolf culture throughout time and all of that too, but that's pretty good, you know, and from that. And I think, you know, part of in the dream, you know, the John Fugelsang part of all of us in a sense, and the Uranus quality of liberating voice. You know, and what he said about, you know, the purpose of the trickster comedian is, you know, you never punch down, right? Not like, well, people we can think of, but never mind, we won't go there at the moment, although critique is important too. You know, and it does quintile Mars, and I love quintile 72-degree angle of irresistible eloquence. And as my ally, longtime ally, Sylvia says, it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. I'm like, well, now we're talking, and if it's not true, let's make it true. And what the conversing brings before us all, you know, is at this pivotal moment, you know, between a lunar eclipse and a solar eclipse, it's considered a spooky time, you know, is again to ladle out equality. What is the desirable vision? What do we want to lay to rest? It's traditionally a time where you clean your house, you do many of these things, you make room for the new birth and the equinox as well, and inviting in. And part of Uranus for all of us is to track everything back to its liberating, originating impulse and set it free. Like, what did this want to be before it got sketchy and cruel and, you know, let's track it back, this person or this thing, you know, track it all the way back. So, yeah, New Testament, as John Fugelsang says in his unfolding further, you know, you're not going to find Jesus New Testament quotes in courthouses, right? And things, because it's like, it's too woke. But again, the genius thing, don't argue with right-wing fundamentalists. Make them argue with Jesus in a liberating way. And again, we're full of, did you know? I'm sorry, I'll have to call him back. Well, I'll just reread the thing and bring it up next week. But the Old Testament, of course, you know, and I like, you know, William Blake called the Old Testament God Old Nobo Daddy, right? And in the Gospel of Judas, which is, you know, excavated late but intriguing, Judas is the chief disciple who really gets Jesus's jokes and get and is spoken of in that gospel, right? It's all, you know, who's narrating. And there's a whole lot of complex astrology in that book, the Book of Judas. So bringing everything up and you know, how is, well, we're liberating everything. We're liberating everything. So, yeah, and then the Bathsheba and David, Solomon and Sheba is a crucial imprint movie that I saw as a child. We are just all remembering these crucial moments, parts of ourselves that are all reporting in for duty. I'm maybe 9 or 8. I still have a nanny, right? And my Scottish nanny is going to take me to the movies. And she goes, how about this harmless comedy called Operation Petticoat? And it's like, no, I must see Solomon and Sheba. And they were like, that's not a movie for a little girl. It's like, no, I just had a willful tantrum, and they took them, and it stayed with me. Right? I said, there's Gina Lollobrigida in a G-string, basically. But I was smitten by that. And of course, that's, you know, a terrible but quintessential part from the Old Testament. You know, David sees Bathsheba bathing. You know, he's the king and goes, I must have that woman. So he... There's a lot of rape and pillage and incest. You know, again, Fuglsang goes through it all. We kind of know it, but it's good to bring it up. And they have their first child dies. Their second child is Solomon. And again, goes into slut shaming in the Bible, so much of that. But Jesus is very pro equality, very pro woman. You know. Mary Magdalene is not a prostitute. Mary Magdalene is hanging out there. As he mentions, you know, Mary Magdalene and the women, the early Christian women, are the primary financiers. Mary Magdalene comes from a wealthy real estate family, right? And they are funding Jesus's ministry, just as Muhammad's wife, right? Muhammad worked for his wife, who was an import-export entrepreneur. And he goes out into the desert and has this vision and for mysterious reasons comes back with rules. But she funds the whole thing. So women have been funding this. And in that same sense, you know, I'd love to direct John Fugel saying, well, he's doing plenty. But to find the liberating parts of the Quran, which are there as well. Where are these equal things? There's a great part in the Quran... I quoted it in the first Visionary Activist show, but it's so good, where Gabriel, Muhammad is talking to Gabriel, and Muhammad says, you know, we could have had no evil at all if you'd made us all alike. And Gabriel said, but Allah would have none of it, and insists that coming into harmony from maximum difference is the greater assignment. We go, that's great. And then in the Quran, I've told that to Islamic women, and they're like, that's in the Quran? It's like, yeah. You know, as is Qadir the green man, who goes to Moses, you meet the green man where two bodies of water converge. And Qadir the green man goes to Moses and says, what is this fetish you have for rules? Here, let me give you Shaktipat. Let me liberate you. And he basically does, and for a moment, Moses is just direct intimacy with the great, fantastic allness of everything. And, you know, and then he forgets and goes back to rules. So, you know, finding the liberating thing in there, but there's a whole crucial part of, I mean, you know, in the Old Testament, right? It's good to go through David Fuglsang's narrative. It's such a gift, right? Sodom and Gomorrah is really all about the rape of virgins, as, you know, here, rape these virgins. And Lot's wife is turned to salt, but Lot goes off with his daughters, and Lot's supposed to be the hero of this thing. He sleeps with both of his daughters and give birth. So there's a lot of incest, rape, things in the thing, that, which again, people who quote the Bible very often don't know this, or who use it as an excuse, you know, and the whole realm of Jesus and women. But in honoring language craft, and John Fuglsang is as a excellent, well, we're all aspiring to be language crafters, and here we are in this Virgo time. Let's hone our language crafting. And so I just want to replay something we played last week, and I promise I will find the author. I announced it last week. I will find it again. But it's a clip called Reframe, and it's just so useful. Many of you wrote me and said, how can I get that? And I sent it to everybody. But here's Reframe.
Don't say I'm stressed. Say my body is preparing me to rise from this challenge. This reframes stress into energy, turning cortisol into courage. Don't say I have to do this. Say I get to do this. This shifts the brain from pressure to gratitude, increasing motivation. Don't say I'll try. Say I commit. Try signals doubt, but commit programs the subconscious for a follow through. Don't say I'm bad at this. Say, I'm still learning this. Your brain loves growth. This rewires failure into progress. Don't say, I don't have time. Say, it's not my priority. This brutal truth exposes what you truly value. Don't say, that's just who I am. Say, that's who I've been, but not who I must stay. Identity is flexible. This creates mental freedom. Don't say, this always happens to me. Say, what can I learn from it this time? This stops victimhood and activates problem-solving mode. Don't say, I don't know. Say, I don't know yet. This adds growth mindset, tricking the brain to search for answers. Don't say, I'm nervous. Say, I'm excited. The brain cannot tell the difference. You control the framing. Don't say it's impossible. Say it hasn't been done by me yet. This opens possibility and dissolves mental barriers. Don't say, I can't do this. Say, how can I do this? Asking questions activates problem-solving circuits. Don't say, I failed. Say, I've discovered one way it doesn't work. This resets failure into data. Don't say, I'm stuck. Say, I'm pausing to reset. This turns paralysis into preparation, reducing anxiety. Don't say they lucky. Say they created opportunities. This shifts envy into responsibility and empowerment. Don't say I wish, say I will. Wish signals helplessness. Will directs action. Don't say I'm overwhelmed. Say I'm prioritizing. This gives the mind order instead of chaos. Don't say this is hard. Say this is stretching me. This frames difficulty as growth, not as punishment. Don't say I don't belong here. Say, I'm learning to belong here. This destroys imposter syndrome with progression language. Don't say, why me? Say, why not me? This turns suffering into strength, unlocking resilience. Do not say, I've lost everything. Say, now I have the space to build better. This transforms despair into renewal, psychology of rebirth. So, just keep that in mind.
So just keep that in mind. It's useful. Again, all of our storytelling, language crafting skills, what we say to ourselves, you know, let's dissolve any limiting cartoons we might have of others that they might have of us and that we might have about ourselves. It's so good that way. And again, I'm enthused by John Fugelsang's wonderful book, Separation of Church and Hate, A Sane Person's Guide to Taking Back the Bible from Fundamentalist Fascists and Flock Fleecing Frauds. There we go. So, yeah, we will be offering the book as a pledge incentive next week, the beginning of Fun Drive. I think it's a powerful fun drive. We want to keep liberating voices alive. You know, we're seeing so much shut down, and this helps everyone to be, you know, a really great agent. So, just the beginning of the book. Jesus was a peaceful, radically nonviolent revolutionary who wasn't American, never spoke English, who hung around lepers, hookers, and crooks, never sought tax cuts for rich Nazarenes, was anti-wealth, anti-death penalty, anti-public prayer too, Matthew 6:5, never asked lepers for a copay, never called poor people lazy, never even slightly anti-gay, never mentioned abortion, supported paying taxes, and was a long-haired, community-organizing, authority-questioning, anti-slut-shaming, brown-skinned, Palestinian, unarmed, homeless Jew. But only if you believe what's actually in the Bible. And what Fugelsang says is, I've come to view Jesus the way I've come to view Elvis. I love the guy, but some of the fan clubs terrify me. And then just for the fun of it, you know, again, just the chapters are laid out very skillfully for all of us to be, you know, agents of liberation, liberating conversation. We love that. So the first chapter is Jesus as an inconvenient radical Jew, which is charming and wonderful. Chapter two is Paul, Jesus's PR man who is not Jesus. Yeah, this is really crucial. You know, he told a brief bit about Paul, but yeah, Paul was a thug and was, you know, stone, you know, responsible for the martyrdom of Saint Stephen, you know, killing people. And then he has a moment of revelation, kinda, and changes teams. And we go, right, but all of his anti-women should be quiet. They should be, you know, not neither heard nor seen, you know, all of that. That's from Paul. That's Paul's distortion of the liberating teachings of Jesus. That's a great chapter. It's great on Audible. I again, you know, I was so enthused to encounter John Fugelsang's interview with Andy Borowitz that I said I'm not even waiting for the review copy. I'm paying for a copy of your book. And while I was waiting for the book to arrive, which it just did, listening to the Audible, and as I walked my dogs outside the besieged city of Washington, D.C., it's very fun. It's deep, relevant fun, right? And also is something just for all of us. It requires no belief or no orthodoxy or no anything, just to be able to engage, as he says, don't fight, don't polarity with, you know, right-wing evangelicals, you know, make them fight with Jesus. It's like, that's very deft, that's very Aikido, that's very skillful, that's very wonderful. We want more of that. And then chapter 3, Master Race Christians of the 21st Century and How to Debate Them. It's a handbook. It's a handbook. Thou shalt, number 4, chapter 4, Thou Shalt Not Take All of This Too Literally. Really great. Chapter 5, Thou Shalt Not Hate Feminists. It's great. It's all with handy, tasty, useful, not harmful to anybody quotes from Jesus's teaching, right? So it's very skillful. Chapter 6, Thou Shalt Not Hate the Gays, right? Jesus didn't, you know, absolutely none of that. Chapter 7, Thou Shalt Not Hate People Who Have Abortions, right? That, and again, remember that St. Bridget was praised for the miracle of abortion. There was a nun who was in trouble and pregnant, shouldn't have been, and Bridget prays for the abortion, and it happens, and everyone celebrates. Again, like these sins are fashionable and fluctuating, right? Because abortion was really cool with the church until the soul enters the body, they said, at quickening, which is when you can feel the baby kicking. Before that, completely fine. You know, and then later at a council of men, they change it, and then he goes into all that. Chapter 8, Thou Shalt Not Hate Illegals, right? Welcome the stranger. Welcome the stranger is a crucial part of the whole dynamic. Thou Shalt Not Hate on Poor People, chapter 9. Thou Shalt Let Go of Thy Sex Hang-ups, chapter 10. Thou Shalt Not Kill People Who Kill People to Prove Killing People is Wrong. Thou Shalt Not Hate Gun Control or Worship Warrior Bro Dude Jesus. Thou Shalt Not Hate Jews, Muslims, or even Atheists. Thou Shalt Not Be or Defend a White Supremacist. The Christians and the Christ followers. It's great. It's a treat. It's useful. It's strategy. It's what we all need for now. We'll go back next week to, again, well, honoring this, and we'll be in Fun Drive, and I'll do more from the book. But also, we'll hear from Mehdi Hassan and outspoken, liberating voices, just calling things out. You know, we have a great Mehdi Hassan addressing huge audience on just the truth of Palestine and the execution of so many journalists. And again, all of this, let us all be agents of liberating message. Let us be increasingly skilled and deft and irresistibly eloquent. You know, and again, the team is the book is wonderful that way. Separation of Church and Hate, really super liberating, charming. Thanks always to Kirsten, Michael, wherever I am. And I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com for Ami and I, Equinox, on Monday night at 5:30 p.m. You can find out more or at Patreon, Visionary Activist Show. And we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team.